high-achieving high school students are getting ready for another school year full of extracurricular activities, SAT prep courses, and AP classes. All of this to try to get into a great school, maybe even an Ivy League or other elite college. But our next guest calls these schools high-pressure conveyor belts. He's with us to make the argument against what elite colleges have become in the United States and to offer some alternatives. William DeResiewicz is with us now. He's former Yale professor and author of the new book, Excellent Sheep, The Miseducation of the American Elite and the Way to a Meaningful Life. Bill, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
So I want to talk first about what's at stake here. A lot of people listening may not be about to try to get a kid into an Ivy League college, but the people we're talking about here are going to be running this country or big parts of it in the future. What's at stake here? How important is it who goes to these elite universities and the kind of education they get?
Right. Well, first of all, what's at stake is exactly what you just said. It's the leadership of our country in the future. It's our present leadership because the system has been in place for a while. But I should say, it's not a small number of kids. I mean, aside from the fact that about 35,000 kids apply to Harvard every year, there's an estimate that about 10 to 15% of high school graduates are caught up in the admissions process for selective colleges. And that's a lot of kids. That's several hundred thousand a year. So even if your kid isn't aspiring to Harvard per se, I'm talking about, you know, maybe the top 100 schools, and that's a lot of kids involved.
And you describe in your book a growing almost arms race for kids looking to meet that admission barrier. How has it changed? How has it grown over time?
Right. It's important to say that this is not, you know, kids today or millennials or the last 10 years. This has been something that's been going on really since the mid-60s, certainly since the early 70s, and people have been writing about it since the 80s, I would say since U.S. News debuted its rankings, which was in the mid-80s. It's the same system I went through when I graduated from high school in 81. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. That phrase you used, the resume arms race. When I went to high school, the kids who got into Ivy League schools had, you know, three extracurriculars and three AP courses each. Now it's 10, 11, 12 extracurriculars, 7, 8, 9 AP courses. Who knows how much worse it could get in the future.
Well, and then looking at these students coming in, you describe them and you point to others who have described them as, on the surface, incredibly competent, incredibly talented, intelligent, capable people. But what's wrong? What are they missing as they get ready for that admissions process and then during school itself?
Right. So they are, you know, the book is called Excellent Sheep, which I should say is a phrase that came from one of my students at Yale. These students are certainly excellent in the sense that schools now describe it. They're academically extremely well prepared. But first of all, that doesn't mean that they are deep or independent or original thinkers, because, and there's so many students who've talked to me about this, people have written about this, the system inculcates a tremendous cynicism about school. School becomes like a video game you just need to crack to get to the next level. So they know how to get the A's, but they also know what the minimum amount they need to do to get an A is. That's part of it. The other part is, if they get to these schools by jumping through an endless succession of hoops, they become great hoop jumpers. And it means that they're not driven by an inner sense of purpose. They're doing what they know the adults want them to do. What I've discovered, and you really do have to look beneath the surface and listen to kids, is that there's a lot of anxiety, panic, sense of aimlessness, sense of isolation, because they can't talk about how much anxiety, panic, and sense of aimlessness they're feeling. This is not the normal anxiety of youth. These are kids who are under more pressure than kids have ever been under before in this country, more pressure than a kid should have to handle, and the mental health statistics tell us that they're cracking. What I also observed is that, you know, because they are never given help in trying to sort of be self-directed, they often come to the end of college, junior year, senior year, they start to run out of hoops. They have a lot of trouble figuring out what to do with themselves, and a lot of them just look for more hoops to jump through, which means law school or finance or consulting. And there are a limitless world. There is a limitless world of possibilities that should be open to these kids, but isn't, because they don't give themselves a chance to think about doing something unconventional.
Well, part of the core of what you're talking about seems to be the role of higher education. This is true from elite institutions and every college, every university in the country. There's a almost prevailing opinion that the goal is to prepare you for a job, to have a return on the investment, to get your career started. You're looking for something else, and you use the word self-directed. You want to see more talk of self-building, of figuring out who we are when we're in the education system.
But I want to be clear, I'm not looking for something else. I'm looking for something more.
Ah.
Those goals of job and career prep are perfectly valid. They've been understood to be an important part of college for a long time. I'm not against them. That's what your major's for. But we, uniquely among the world systems, also allow kids to take 2/3, 60% of their classes in other fields. And that's where schools have really started to fall down, precisely because there's been this relentless message that it's all about practicality. But you know what? Sometimes practicality isn't very practical. It isn't practical if it leads you to a goal that isn't the right goal for you to be pursuing. And one of the most important reasons to build a self or get in touch with yourself or discover who you are, or whatever phrase you want to use, is so that you can figure out in very practical terms what job, what career, what field, what path is the right one for you. You know, if you're doing something that doesn't give you a sense of joy, a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning, then you're not going to be very happy, and you might, you know, there's a good chance that you're not even going to be very successful either.
And so what you see happening, going back, you mentioned finance and consultancy, kids don't develop that sense of self, figuring out what they want to do, so they look at the same hoops that other people are viewing as the next successful step?
Well, that's a big part of it. I mean, there's an idea that kids go into those fields out of greed because they pay a lot of money, and I'm not discounting the greed motive. But when you talk to kids about why they're doing it or why they see their peers doing it, a lot of the answer is, you know, I don't really think that I have a passion. So why not go get a job that earns a lot of money? And that's actually a very reasonable logic to me. What's not reasonable is that we've developed a system that takes these very bright, ambitious kids and manages to get them to the age of 22 without any sense of what their passion is, or what their purpose is. I don't necessarily love the word passion. Or, even more, any sense of how to go about finding one. That's the tragedy here.
Now, in the book, you look at different points where this could start to be corrected. Let's start with parents and how they currently might put pressure on their high-achieving kids and what they might do differently to encourage this kind of learning you're talking about.
Well, the first thing I want to say, and it's very important for people to hear this, is that for most kids, a typical middle-class kid who's actually the normal kid who goes to these colleges, where you go has no effect on future earnings. This has been studied very carefully. You can get into a top school and still go to a state school, and you're going to do just as well if we're just looking at the money, right? Which is what I know parents are legitimately concerned about. Because what matters much more than where you go is who you are. And if you are that bright, talented, ambitious, energetic kid who could have gone to an elite school, you do just as well. So that's the first thing for parents to know. And the second thing I think for them to think about is what their motives are. Why do they feel that their kid has to get into a name brand private university? And very often, quite frankly, it has to do with the parents' own ego, their own social competition within their community or their extended family, their own sense that their grade for being a parent is where the kid got into school. And parents are, I mean, I describe the anxiety, the sort of all the mental health problems, literally mental health problems that a lot of high-achieving, affluent kids have now. Parents are often oblivious to it because they think that if you are a high achiever, if you're getting the grades, then everything is fine. And that's not the case. Parents need to get in touch with where their kids are really at.
We're talking to former Yale University professor William Derezowitz about his new book. It's called Excellent Sheep, The Miseducation of the American Elite and the Way to a Meaningful Life. You can join the conversation. What do you think about what our guest is saying, this idea that elite higher education is broken in the U.S.? Is there too much focus on building that college admissions portfolio, maybe during the high school years, to get into the college of your choice? Are students learning what they need to learn in higher education? Call in and share your experience. Your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation now with former Yale University professor William Derezowitz about the elite education system in the United States, the Ivy League and other schools on that caliber. We're taking your calls now. Do you agree with him that there's a problem with the way we're educating the leaders, in effect, of our future? Does this resonate with your college experience or your effort to get into a college? Did you go to one of these Ivy League schools? Are you considering them for your kids? Call in at 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Oh, we'll go right to a caller. We've got Jeannie on the line in Eau Claire. Jeannie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment is I have a senior in high school who's a 3.9 student, 25 on his ACT, taking multiple AP classes this fall, and also trying to get a football scholarship, and he's made a commitment to a Division I school. And this summer, we had some very serious conversations because he was so stressed and had so much anxiety and all this pressure on these kids. I certainly agree with the author and this program, and it's very frustrating as a parent because we're not pushing him. It is the school and it's the system, and he's figuring this out along the way, but we really don't even know what to do as parents other than to just keep talking to him that a lot of this is just too much. He's put so much stress on himself to be the highest achiever and to get a scholarship and to get the highest ACT. In his school, there's competition for ACT scores. That's my comment.
Thank you so much for sharing that story. That's kind of exactly what you're talking about, Bill. Do you have advice for a parent who's not putting that pressure on but just feels that draw for their kid getting sucked into that pressure?
Yeah, you know, students have said this to me. It doesn't matter if your parents are crazy or not because everybody else's parent is crazy and the school is crazy and the environment is crazy. You know, I'm not going to pretend to have a simple answer to this dilemma. One thing I would say is that I was talking before about parents being out of touch. I'm not saying that Jeannie was out of touch with her son, but I will say that it's too bad that the conversation didn't happen until after her son was already out of high school. And this is exactly the kind of thing that I wish parents would talk about with their kids much earlier. And talk about, you know, what, I mean, just to be able to talk about why are you feeling stressed? Do you need to feel as stressed as you have to? Do you have to, you know, what does the, I mean, kids, they don't have a sense of what the future looks like, and they make a lot of assumptions that tend to be driven by the messages they're getting from the world around them. Do you have to drive yourself as much? What are the alternatives? What really matters to you? Why are you doing this? Let's explore other ways to go to college or other places you could go. I mean, again, these are not easy conversations to have, but I would say that families need to start by having the conversation.
Jeannie, thanks so much for the call, and good luck to you and your son. We've got Ron on the line now in Madison. Ron, hi.
Good afternoon. I have three kids. One went Ivy for undergraduate and graduate school. Two went state school for undergraduate. One of those kids went to Berkeley for West Coast Ivy, unquote, for graduate school. While I think all of them got a good education, they're all doing well, I also feel that perhaps Ivy, or the other case, the West Coast Ivy, was a door opener that put their resume or the write-up on top of the pile. I'd like the speaker to comment on that.
Gotcha, Ron. Thanks for the call. So even if the education isn't better at that elite school, it's good on the resume, and you hear about the contacts you make being a key to future business success.
Right, right. Again, let's remember that studies show that if you're just looking at earnings, it actually doesn't matter. But it's absolutely true. It is absolutely true that these schools open doors, put you in a network, contacts, etc. And I want to be very clear about this. I am not saying that this choice is without cost. If you want to be ushered into the elite, you would do very well to go to an Ivy League school or a place like Stanford. The question is, at what cost? There are costs on both sides, and that's what I want people to realize. It is not a cost-free proposition, and I'm not even talking about tuition money. It is not a cost-free proposition to go to an elite school, and that's exactly how it's being presented. This is going to set you up for life. Well, not necessarily. It could end up making you a very unhappy person. And that's what people need to think about.
Well, another cost on a broader scale, if these elite schools are the ticket to an elite life, at least for some, you point out that the people who can do this admission process are the people who can afford to do it, who can pay for extracurricular activities, who have the time. And this ultimately is, I guess, strengthening, hardening a class segregation in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, again, we have extensive statistics that bear this out. Socioeconomic stratification is severe at selective colleges, and it's getting worse. And the main reason is not tuition money, although that's obviously an issue. It is how much it costs to create one of these hoop-jumping machines, one of these achievement machines. And to me, the real answer, although it would be nice if the elite private institutions reformed their admissions process so that you didn't have to become one of these kids, what we really need to do is rebuild the great public higher education we used to have in this country, and to a certain extent we still have. And listen, you guys are in Wisconsin. You have one of the best public university systems in the country. I don't know the statistics in Wisconsin. I suspect that things are in trouble there because they're in trouble everywhere, and that state funding has been cut for decades because it's been cut everywhere long before 2008. We need to make the investment in our kids. We need to stop making them take out student loans and go back to a time when, for example, the University of California was tuition-free until the early 1980s. And I'm urging people who can hear me in Wisconsin, vote for politicians that are going to raise taxes on the affluent to pay for public higher education for everybody.
Well, Bill, short of that, what would you like to see maybe right now or next year from the admissions process, from the institutions we're talking about, to take some of the heat off, to broaden the different kind of learning you want to see?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I'll get to specific suggestions, but the sad truth is that there's very little that you can propose that rich families aren't going to be able to game, you know, like college essays, right, that are supposed to show the real kid. Well, you know, we all know that they're coached, if not ghostwritten now. I would limit the number of extracurriculars. I would ask schools to stop giving the large admissions preferences they currently give to athletes and to legacies, people who went to that school, let alone to donors. Don't be impressed by any opportunity that's been enabled by parental wealth. I think affirmative action should be based on class instead of race, or at least class in addition to race. But the truth is, are these things going to happen? I mean, you know, private institutions have reformed themselves in the past, but they're only ever going to go so far because they're private institutions that depend on having a certain critical mass of wealthy families.
As we wrap up, if our leaders of the future continue to be the excellent sheep of your title, what do we lose in terms of the leadership we get, the creativity in government, in industry, and elsewhere?
Well, look, I mean, I think it's widely agreed now, at least I hope it is, that our leadership class is pretty comprehensively failing across government, banks, corporations, academia itself, the nonprofit world. And they all seem to be failing in exactly the same way and in exactly the way you would predict from the way they've been trained. They're adult versions of excellent sheep. They're narrowly technocratic. They're out of touch with the rest of society because they grew up in a socioeconomically homogenous environment. They're risk-averse. They're self-serving, but at the same time very self-satisfied. This matters to all of us because this is the system that for 50 years has been giving us our leaders.
Bill, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was William Derezowitz. He's a former Yale University professor. We've been talking about his new book, Excellent Sheep, The Miseducation of the American Elite and the Way to a Meaningful Life. He mentioned toward the end there the student loan debt issue. We'll be talking about that very issue tomorrow on Central Time from 3:30 to 4 o'clock.